If you know, when I speak, I like to introduce things from maybe outside the realm of Christendom to illustrate my sermon sometime. And since we're going to be talking today about being rooted, I thought I would dig up a picture that's in the museum in Amsterdam, the Van Gogh Museum, and his interpretation of tree roots by Vincent van Gogh. I guess if you look closely enough, you can see those. I'm not sure what his inspiration was. But anyway, we're going to be talking about being rooted today. This message was kind of inspired by my few summer golf outings I had this past year with Evan, who has deigned to play with me periodically, and Darren Wells and others. If you play golf courses around Michigan or anywhere else for that matter, there are cart paths that are disrupted by tree roots. Now, this one has a ball in the middle of it, and it would never be my ball that ended up on a cart path rather than in the fairway, right, Evan?
Not after your foot wedge, no.
After my foot wedge, exactly right. So anyway, I said, and if you're bouncing along a cart with your Evan or Darren, who's not here today, you need to hold on tightly because it's like speed bumps on the cart path. And I said, there's a message in here somewhere. So with that, we're going to go on. Of course, tree roots come from trees. And I said, let's talk a little bit, look at biblical tree references. And I didn't know this, but trees are the third most mentioned living thing in the Bible, after God and after people. And here's a few references to trees these are in the Old Testament. And during Solomon's lifetime, Judah and Israel from 1 Kings, from Dan to Beersheba, lived in safety, everyone under their own vine and under their own fig tree. Well, I hope that you liked figs if you were living then, because it didn't say apple tree, pear tree, or any other kind of tree. It's a fig tree, but it's a symbol of God's providence. That took place back then, under their own fig tree. 1 Kings 19. But Elijah went a day's journey into the wilderness, came down, sat under a broom tree, and this was after he had fled Mount Carmel, and he's looking for refuge, and he's hiding under this broom tree, and he's really feeling down about his situation. But God provides him and miraculously feeds him underneath this broom tree. And then there's this figurative reference from Proverbs where wisdom is referred to as a tree of life. To those who take hold of her, those who hold her fast will be blessed. And then we've heard many references to the cedars of Lebanon, which were named for their location in the mountains of Lebanon. They were used in construction, various temples and things like that, because of their beautiful red color, their strength, sweet aroma, and various palaces were built out of the cedars of Lebanon. And in the New Testament, several references to trees, etc., in the book of Matthew and other places. Every tree produces good fruit, but the rotten tree produces bad fruit. Good tree can't produce bad fruit, nor can a rotten tree produce good fruit. Every tree that does not produce good fruit is chopped down and thrown into the fire, so then you will recognize them by their fruit. The mustard seed, continuing in Matthew, smallest of all seeds, yet when it's full grown, greater than other herbs, comes like a tree, so that the birds of the air come and nest in its branches. Of course, we're all familiar with the parable of the sower, even though it doesn't refer specifically to trees. First to seeds being cast on good soil where they're able to take root and provide sustenance and grow and provide a fold 60 or 80 times more than what was sown. Here's your various biblical trees: broom tree, cedar tree, a fig tree, and a mustard tree. The broom tree provides some shade for Elijah out there in the boondocks in the heated sun of the day. This is what's called a bristlecone pine tree. Anybody know about these trees? Bristlecone pine trees. So these are in Eastern California. This is a tree called Methuselah, and they've done core samples to find out its age by checking the number of rings, I guess is how they continue to do that. But you want to guess how old they deem this tree to be, this particular one? Any guesses? What? Two? More? What? 300. It's a baby. 4,800 years old is what they estimate this tree to be. So this tree was around before they built the pyramids at Giza, before Jesus was even had even come into the world, and continues to survive and even thrive in its environment, which is described as the uppermost edge of the timberline among the windswept peaks of California, Nevada, and Utah. The tree's ability to thrive in this unforgiving landscape of freezing temperatures and soils and relentless winds is the key to their remarkable longevity. They draw sustenance from the most brittle layers of limestone and carbonate rock, what passes for fertile soil at high elevations. By the way, you cannot go visit this tree because people are idiots. And so it's, this location is a secret up in the California highlands. So this tree is able to get sustenance from its even its harshest climate, its harshest environment, to be able to survive and thrive for 4,853 years, according to the reference that I found. So trees are an important part of what's called our biosphere. There's a certain description I'd like to read here about a biosphere. This is a physical biosphere. Although the majority of Earth's terrestrial biomass is represented by trees, the fundamental importance of these seemingly ubiquitous plants for the very existence and diversity of life on Earth is perhaps not fully appreciated. The biosphere is dependent on the metabolism, death, recycling of plants, especially trees. Their vast trunks and root systems store carbon dioxide, move water, produce oxygen that's released into the atmosphere. The organic matter of the soil develops primarily from decayed leaves, twigs, branches, roots, and fallen trees, all of which recycle nitrogen, carbon, oxygen, other important nutrients. A few organisms as important as trees for maintaining Earth's ecology. And I think that can be projected into a spiritual sense. If we envision ourselves as being living organisms, and we have kind of a responsibility or a commitment or the ability to affect, influence our spiritual biosphere, the spiritual realm that we find ourselves in. So look at these bristlecone pines that are able to withstand these incredibly difficult environmental forces. In the spiritual world, are we strong to withstand the negative forces and influence that we find ourselves in? Do we nurture the spiritual environment that we live in? And ultimately, it comes down to, how are we rooted? And I think that there are several aspects that we'll go into here as part of this part of the lesson. On Facebook a couple weeks ago, I don't know why I even look at Facebook, it's such an annoyance most of the time. But somebody 2 or 3 weeks ago, whenever it was complaining because Halloween, daylight savings time, and the election all happened within a few days of each other, back at the end of October. And they were moaning, how am I ever going to survive this? I mean, seriously, if you can't survive that, how are you going to survive the things that are really, really challenging in life? So we're going to talk about several things here that I think constitute how we define ourselves as being rooted. First one is righteousness. 2 Timothy says we should be pursuing righteousness, not letting it come to us. We should be pursuing it. What are the things that we pursue in life? Are we pursuing, actively engaged in looking to be righteous? Then in 1 John, are we practicing it? Once we've caught righteousness, if we can ever be caught, are we practicing being righteous. Last week I read the scripture, Psalm 1 through 3, as sort of a preamble to this week's sermon. I'm going to read it again. Blessed is the one who does not walk in step with the wicked, or stand in the way that sinners take, or sit in the company of mockers, but whose delight is in the law of the Lord, and who meditates on his law day and night. I think that we could say that that's the description of somebody who's righteous. What does it say about that person? That person is like a tree planted by streams of water, rooted deeply in the soil there, which yields its fruit in season, whose leaf does not wither. Whatever they do prospers. Righteousness, the first element of what I think that, or one of the things that I think are required for us to be rooted. Years and years ago, there was an arena in Atlanta, Georgia. It was called the Omni, just the Omni. It was down near the convention center. It's called the Omni. Because Omni means everything. And the idea was that this Omni, I don't think it's there, it itself is not omnipresent. It's no longer there. I think they tore it down. That was a long time ago. And the idea was that it could host any number of events. But this is also a description of God. And it's part of how we are rooted. Can we reflect on God's presence in our lives in these three elements? Omniscient means all-knowing. I'm going to read this passage from Psalm 139. Omniscience sees and knows everything, right? You have searched me, Lord, and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you, Lord, know it completely. You hem me in behind and before, and you lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. Omnipresence, where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me, your right hand will hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness will hide me, and the light becomes night around me, even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like the day, for darkness is as light to you. Omnipotent, all-powerful, for you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. My frame was not hidden from you. When I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth, your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. The omni part of God's nature, okay, is another element of how we are to be rooted, is reflect on that and know that he is present in all these ways. You know, the word opportunistic is one that I think has negative connotations. In our typical vernacular, it means that we're taking advantage of situations for our own benefit. But I think that God calls us to be opportunistic, to look for ways to serve him, look for opportunities to serve him here in this world, in our spiritual biosphere. And the classic example, and one of my favorite passages, is in Esther 4:14, where Esther, the story of Esther, and I've talked about this many times because I really love this story, is where Esther is given a chance, an opportunity to save her people by pleading her case before the king. And her uncle Mordecai comes to her and says, I'm paraphrasing, how do you know that this opportunity has not been presented to you for this very moment in time? And she leaps at that. She takes that advantage. She is opportunistic. Ephesians 5:15 through 16. Be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity, because the days are evil. Therefore, not be foolish, but understand what the Lord's will is. And maybe the most important passage, I think, that reinforces this notion is from Matthew. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, he will sit on his glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before him. He will separate the people one from another. A shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, stage right, Adam, come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me. And the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you? The king will reply, truly, I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters, you did for me. So I think that this is an area where this church really, really shines. You know, thanks to Vicky and others, and we are a service to the community. We find opportunities. God lays out opportunities for us to serve him every single day. Maybe not in big ways, maybe not in ways that are visible to everyone, but I truly believe that if God is working in our lives, that he presents opportunities to say a kind word, to help somebody in need. That's part of being opportunistic, seeing opportunities, and that's also part of how we are rooted. So next one is being together. There's a passage in 1 Peter chapter 2 where he talks about as being living stones that are being built into a house. I hope I'm not struck down by saying this, but I think that the parallel also could be, Peter could have used the analogy that we are roots growing together to support a tree with our fellow brothers and sisters and Christians here. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. Carry each other's burdens. And in this way, you'll fulfill the law of Christ. We're in this together. Whether you want to go back to the spiritual stones being built into a tree, or whether you want to use my analogy that we are roots, living roots, that are being built into a tree. So I appreciate Rick leading this song, O Come, O Come, Emmanuel, and not just because we're in the season of Christmas, but because I always come back to this funky word, Ebenezer. It's in that song, here I raise my Ebenezer, hither to your help I've come. And this is a passage that's taken from 1 Samuel, where the Philistines, those nasty Philistines, these days we might refer to them as Buckeyes, but sorry, man. First Samuel 7, the Philistines are after the Israelites. When the Philistines heard that Israel had assembled in Mizpah, the rulers of the Philistines came up to attack them. When the Israelites heard of it, they were afraid because of the Philistines. They said to Samuel, do not stop crying out to the Lord our God for us, that he may rescue us from the hand of the Philistines. Then Samuel took a suckling lamb, sacrificed as a whole burnt offering to the Lord. He cried out to the Lord on Israel's behalf, and the Lord answered him. While Samuel was sacrificing the burnt offering, the Philistines drew near to engage Israel in battle. But that day the Lord thundered with loud thunder against the Philistines and threw them into such a panic that they were routed before the Israelites. The men of Israel rushed out of Mizpah and pursued the Philistines, slaughtering them along the way to a point below Beth-Kar. Then Samuel took a stone and set it up between Mizpah and Sharon. He named it Ebenezer, saying, "Thus far the Lord has helped us." And the word Ebenezer, so the Philistines were subdued and they stopped invading Israel's territory. Throughout Samuel's lifetime, the hand of the Lord was against the Philistines. The word Ebenezer comes from two Hebrew words that simply means stone of help. Commentary I read says it's a word with power and importance. We may read it over in Scripture without a second thought. But what we need to understand is the importance of this word, not just Samuel and the Israelites, but to us in the 21st century. Christians can raise their Ebenezer because God is our stone of help. He is solid and will help us through the times of trials. We all have had times when we know without God we would not have made it through. That's when we can raise our Ebenezer, remember, and be thankful for the grace that God has bestowed upon us. So this is the fifth in a series of six elements of being rooted. And then there's day spring. Thanks, Jessica, for reading that passage from the book of Luke. I didn't know Luke had more than 78 verses. It does. It's got a long chapter. And I had to look this up. I thought day spring meant spring. It doesn't. What does it mean? What does day spring mean? Where does the day spring forth? In the dawn. It's another word for dawn. Dawn of the day, day spring. And I had Jessica read the version that she did because other versions translate this into dawn. But I thought day spring might be more meaningful. Plus it starts with D, which is part of my message today. It refers to the metaphorical spring from which the sun springs forth each day. So it's usually translated simply as the east. But it's part of this prophecy that Zechariah, John the Baptist's father, says. And he's referring to John a little bit in that passage. Then he's talking about Jesus. You are our day spring. We look forward to you every dawn, every morning, of being the light from the east. And think about this. Can we be engaged in our spiritual biosphere? Can we be rooted without the sun rising from the east as a day spring and shining on us and giving us sustenance? It's necessary for life, the day spring, the dawn. And one thing I sometimes take issue with that song, O Come, O Come, Emmanuel, is that it says, shall come to you. Emmanuel shall come. But in fact, he has come to us. He comes to us every morning as from the east to shine light on us and give us sustenance. Okay. So how are we rooted? Are we righteous? Do we pursue and practice righteousness? Do we recognize God's omniscience, omnipresence, and omnipotence? Whoops. There we go, sorry. Are we opportunistic in the right way? Do we look for God giving us opportunities to serve him at every day that we're out and about in the community, in our church congregation? He is. He's giving us opportunities, and we are taking advantage of them. I'm sure that he is giving us many more than we can actually see. Are we together? Do we see ourselves as a family system that's rooted together and working for the cause of Christ? Can we look in the past? Can we look back and see that God has been faithful to us in our lives? Can we raise a stone, a spiritual stone of thanksgiving to God for his help in times past? And can we look to the east every day and see Jesus as our day spring, our dawn? Look ahead and see him in the dawn of every day. Anybody know Joyce Kilmer? You went by Joyce, not Alfred. No, wow. when I was in high school, he was like required reading. So his name was Alfred Joyce Kilmer, but he went by Joyce. I don't know why. Anyway, he was born in 1886, and he died. He volunteered to be in the AEF, the American Expeditionary Force, in World War I. He was a soldier in France, and he was killed by a sniper in July of 1918. He was a devout Catholic, had six kids at the time. He wrote a lot of literature, including his most famous poem called Trees. You know, Vicki knows. Trees by Joyce Kilmer. I think that I shall never see a poem lovely as a tree, a tree whose hungry mouth is pressed against the earth's sweet flowing breast, a tree that looks at God all day and lifts her leafy arms to pray, a tree that may in summer wear a nest of robins in her hair, upon whose bosom snow has lain, who intimately lives with rain. Poems are made by fools like me, but only God can make a tree. That's a powerful little 12 lines, isn't it? A tree whose hungry mouth is pressed against the earth's sweet flowing breasts. Do we see ourselves being served by God, being nurtured by God? A tree that looks at God all day and lifts her leafy arms to pray, do we? Do we lift our leafy arms to pray daily? A tree that may in summer wear a nest of robins in her hair. Do we provide sustenance to those around us, taking advantage of opportunities? Upon whose bosom snow has lain, who intimately lives with rain. Are we rooted to survive all the seasons that come our way? So, in the beginning of my message, I talked about how a number of trees are mentioned throughout Scripture. And then the one that really struck me is there's one, second chapter of Genesis, Tree of Life, last chapter of Revelation, Tree of Life. That's the one tree that is continuous throughout all of Scripture, even though there's not other reference to it. It's there at the beginning, it's there at the end. It's sort of an assurance that God is with us and provided these elements to help us remain rooted despite the storms that life throws our way. You know, what's it going to look like? Will it look like Methuselah, the tree in the windswept peaks of Eastern California? Will it look like the Christmas tree in Rockefeller Center? Will it look like that goofy tree in Avatar? If you've seen Avatar, the Tree of Life. I suspect it'll look like none of those things. It's a symbol of God's eternal nature. The Alpha and the Omega, a consistent presence throughout history, a promise for us who remain rooted in this life. With that, I'm going to have Rick lead our closing song. Please stand as we sing.